Grabs up.
Tom. Oi.
Rulies. You can eat when you agree to see a solicitor. Oh,
give him his dinner and stop being a prat, will you?
Just so as you know, DCI's on the warpath outside. He'd be calling your boss and everything.
Well, I haven't finished here, and you can tell him that.
Maybe you'll be needing that other job after all. Your funeral.
What does that mean? Would you look at that burger? It's dry as a bone.
It's okay.
Why won't you see a solicitor?
I've had solicitors before. They're crap.
Really? You do surprise me. But seriously, it would be a lot better for you if you would talk to a solicitor about what happened that night.
Have you finished with me or what?
I've still got to fill in the gaps in your file.
Yeah, of course. It's all right.
You could do with a bit of feeding up.
Well, me and Ash were staying at a hotel. We went for days without food.
What happened to Ash's gyro?
Have you ever tried living two people on £38.50 a week?
Well, it would have helped. Unless you were blowing it on takeaways all the time.
You had to have takeaways because we didn't have no cooker. It's a hotel room, yeah? Get real, will ya?
So, what did you do?
Chip shop for the first part of the week. And then we get hungry. You could feel it coming on.
I guess Ash couldn't get a job, eh? How old was he?
15.
Okay, so what did you do? Because you obviously didn't starve to death and there's no care records for a while.
We spent 2 weeks in that pit of a hotel, sneaking me in through the window, scared stiff. You'd be lying there in bed at 3 a.m. and there'd be some skaghead trying to push your door through. Ash even got his trainers nicked one night by some kiddie threatening him with a needle.
Did you ever think about going back to the care home?
Yeah, and leave Ash. Chloe would give us something every now and then, but Lee didn't like us, so that wasn't easy. That's when we put our heads together and decided what we was going to do. Ash knew this guy from Nick called Dion, and that's how we got to Brighton and got going selling pills on Brighton Beach.
I see.
I'm not saying it's a clever thing to do. When you're a 13-year-old missing person and you've got police looking for you, CID looking for you, you name it, you've not got much choice. I either sold drugs or I didn't eat.
So where were you living?
We couldn't get a tenancy, so we had to find B&Bs that would have us and pay our own rent, pay our own food, to do that 24/7. But one afternoon, I remember, it was hot, like it was the last day of summer. We met up with this kiddie we knew called Declan. Went on the pier and had fish and chips. Ash said he's always wanted to play golf. So we went up to the mini golf on the seafront. That was a good laugh. I remember thinking we'd made it. The sun was out, the sea was this blue sparkling colour, and there we were playing golf. We jumped over the fence at the end, took the clubs with us to remind us of it. I decided I was never gonna go back into care again, no matter how hard they was looking for me. No more prats in the care homes and more stupid social workers. No offence, like.
Oh, none taken. Actually, I know just what you mean, believe me.
Well, you don't seem so bad.
Well, thanks, I think.
You remind me of one of my teachers.
In a good way, I hope.
She was all right. She was over in Brighton one day for some shopping or something. She recognised me. She came back every single day after that, for that whole autumn. School would finish, and she'd drive over to find me. I liked to see her. But I never stopped long. Thought she might call the 5-0s.
Did you ever think it might have been easier to hop in her car and go back to the care home?
Sometimes. When it started getting colder and wetter, people stopped going down the seafront. Every day, you're looking over your back, trying to do what you've got to do and go, because there's guys out there who would kill you for what you've got. Ash was there, but you could never relax.
You must have been exhausted.
1.5 years we was living like that.
Doesn't sound much fun.
No.
So, what did you do?
Nothing.
You don't have to tell me.
Oh, no, I don't.
I've got your files here. You were arrested about that time, weren't you?
So why do you need me to tell you?
I thought you might like to tell someone who wanted to listen.
It was Chloe. That nice boyfriend of hers. He used to hit her. One day he did something worse. Me, Ash and Declan went after him. We caught him on the seafront. We still had our golf clubs, so we had them with us. We went mad on him.
I see.
Look, I'm not proud of it. I didn't do it to be the big name. I don't know how many times I've been scared for my life. You change.
Did the police arrest you there?
They actually never knew it was us. They came and we ran away. I remember running up through Churchill Square, knocking over all these people, dodging everyone. And we got away in the end. Declan went home and we went back to Chloe's room. She was in the YMCA at the time. And we thought we was okay. But then the manager tried to throw us out. He said there were no guests in the room. We weren't in trouble. We just wanted to stay in her room a few nights to look after her. But he told us to leave or he'd call the police. So Ash told him, fine, you've got to make us leave. We broke into the manager's bedroom and we barricaded the door with his bed frame. Then we started playing on his PlayStation. Until we had God knows how many feds around there. They shouted out to the window, you've got 2 minutes to open the door or we push it through. One thing led to another and in the end, the manager's stuff got thrown out the window, which knocked a few of them to the floor.
Come on, man.
If you imagine a waterfall of shoes, chairs, guitars, cabinets, everything, apart from the PS2. They put the door through with a big metal banger, and they came flying through and put me on the floor, and I was fighting, I was doing roly-polies. Next thing, I was waking up in a cell. Little did I know, police carry stun guns. Now I know that.
No way.
I knew, you see, because I had the two clip marks, the two pin marks on my back. But I scared them. I was still young. I was pretty small still. I was out for 3 hours. I wouldn't be surprised if half of them thought I was dead.
I bet you were popular after that.
There wasn't a care in town who'd have me.
You do surprise me.
They split us up, me and Ash, so I lost him anyway.
I'm sorry, but I guess they'd have to.
I was better for him anyway. He didn't have to look after me all the time, so he could get going on certain other plans he got with Declan.
And what happened to you?
I ended up in care in Wokingham. I don't know why they took me in. I suppose they had to.
Well, at least you were away from all the drugs and stuff. You could start again.
I know. Never got my door kicked in at night no more.
Did you make any friends?
Kiddies in the care home were all right. The neighbours weren't so good. They all thought our parents had put us into care because of some fault of our own. It all started because of a football over a fence. You'll find this quite stupid. I went round to get the ball, and the bloke next door headbutted me.
He what?
I know. I was a bit surprised to be headbutted by a grown man, but he hated us kids, and he never thought there should be a care home there. So I went back into the kitchen of the care home, and I got a screwdriver, and I busted a lock of the cupboards where they kept the sharp knives. I wanted to see if the neighbour still wanted to headbutt me. I got halfway down the path, and two of the care workers came up and took the knife off me. Anyway, the thing was, the neighbour was watching through the windows, and he called old Bill. They picked up in like 20 seconds, and there's this big row.
He had a knife. He was coming round and
attacked
me.
OK, sir, could you step back, please?
Look, he was going to kill me. This place should be closed
down.
Calm down,
sir.
It's an absolute disgrace.
I'm trying to sort these things out.
Look, I want him locked up, right?
Listen to me. I want you to step back.
I want him locked up.
And I want you to calm down. I understand the problem.
He's walking around with a knife in his hand. It's an absolute disgrace.
I can understand that, sir. Now, calm down.
How can I calm down?
They put me in the back of their car, and I could see this neighbour grinning. I thought, that's me done then.
But you didn't go to court. Didn't they charge you?
All right, Donna.
You can go home now.
I haven't finished.
We finished with you. Your boss wants you over at the office as soon as you like.
Lexi still doesn't want a solicitor.
Lexi's had his chance for that. And now I'm going to ask him a few questions.
No, I'm going to call my boss. It's not appropriate in this case.
Oh, I've spoken to him already. You can go home now. He's coming down to sit in.
It's okay, Zonna. I'm all right. Well, thanks for the talk, though, yeah?
You'll be fine. I know you will.
I watched Donna go. She was just like the teacher who came to find me on the beach. Like a lot of the people who say they want to help, they can't really do all that much in the end. They can't make your dad into a nice man, or give you your brother and sisters back, or give you somewhere nice to live. That's why, in the end, I don't mind the feds. You know where you are with them. At least they get stuff done. By that time with the neighbour and the knife, they took care of that okay. Go on then, I'm ready. What do you want me to say?
I'm on Lonely Street, age nearly 3 weeks.
Let's talk a little bit about what you've just heard in episode 3 of Legacy Gets a Break, and let's focus on whether charges should be pressed against him, whether he should be sent down or not for what's happened. Can I start with you, Mr. Brown? Would that be all right?
Yeah, it's fine with me, yep.
Things are going from bad to worse for Legacy. He's been involved with selling drugs. He's been involved in a violent attack on his sister's boyfriend. He's now taken a knife round to your house and been apprehended by police. He's got form. Mm-hmm. He's been in trouble for a while. And if you press charges, Mr. Brown, he's going to go into a secure unit, into a children's prison. So, why did you headbutt him again?
That is a complete fallacy, the headbutt. It was not a headbutt. It's what he wanted people to think. I don't know why anyone would believe him more than believe me. It was not a headbutt.
So what did you do to him?
I squared up to him. It was a culmination of a series of events that has just driven me to despair. It's day in, day out, and I've had enough of it. And he came round and I just squared up. Look, we brushed foreheads. That's what we did. We touched forelocks, you know what I mean?
So your head touched his head.
It wasn't a headbutt. Than a squaring up. I mean, if I butted him, he'd know about it.
Okay. This is a guy who's living next door to a load of troublemakers, in his view. He doesn't want them living there. He doesn't want all that kind of hassle. And now things have come to a head, and he's had a brush of forelocks, or a headbutt, depending on who you believe, with Legsy, and he's got to decide whether to send him to prison or not.
Yeah, I don't want to send him to prison. It's just everything else. He's had a knife. He's unruly. He's a bad un, and he needs sorting out. And he's making my life and the people around me an absolute misery, and it's just not on. We have this day in, day out, and it's ruining the community, and I think that he needs to have something done. He needs to be taken away. He needs to be put in a secure unit where he can be monitored and taught a lesson.
What do you think, Steve? Is Legsy a bad apple, like Mr. Brown thinks?
My honest opinion is a bad apple of circumstance. You know, if you stick an apple in a barrel of bad apples, you're going to end up with another bad one. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be bad for the rest of his life. I guess what I'm hearing is a whole bunch of intolerance. You know, you've got intolerance both ways here. And something occurred to me when I was listening to the show earlier, in that there was some talk about getting the sort of victims to actually confront the perpetrators, and there was a lot of learning that went that way. And what I'm hearing is I think there'll be an awful lot in this for Mr. Brown to actually talk to Legsy and get
talk
to know
to him. Tell Mr. Brown.
Yeah, talk to him, get to know him, because at the moment what you're seeing is that, you know, you're just seeing a bad lad coming around causing you grief, but you know nothing about him. You know, get to know him. Engage him, find out what makes him tick, find out the stuff he likes, you know, get to know him, and you know, maybe he won't be such a problem for you.
Well, I've done my best to get around that place and talk to the people in charge. I've tried to confront them, I've tried to deal with them, I've tried to put my point across. I get nil response. Oh yes, I'm very sorry, it won't happen again. Well, it does happen again. They're not interested in knowing me, talking to me. All they're interested in is causing trouble and upsetting the people around them. You know, I've done my bit. I shouldn't have to spend my time trying to keep these lads under control. It's just not on. Why should I?
Do you think they need control, though? I mean, the next time the ball comes over, it's a bit of an accident. Why don't you just go and play football with him? It's, you know...
I don't want to play football with him. I don't want to have a party with him. I don't want to play cards with him. You know, why should I? You know, it's every single day I just get non-stop graffiti, abuse, fireworks chucked in my garden. My apple tree was chopped down the other night. It's just never ending. It's like I'm some sort of running joke, you know. Why should I spend my time trying to talk to him to make him a better person? That is not my job.
Okay. Mr. Brown's got a simple choice, and that's whether to press charges or not. What then happens to Legsy is a little bit out of his control. We'll talk to PC Williams about what will happen if he presses charges in a second, but just quick straw poll around the table. If you're in this situation, are you going to press charges against Legsy, Steve?
Me? I'd like to think that I had you know, some tolerance, but I do sympathise with Mr. Brown. You know, I'm not living next to that stuff day in, day out, but, you know, I guess my gut reaction would be no.
No, James?
Similar, really. I sympathise with the situation, but I'd want to see something more effective happening, and I'd do what I could to push that forward.
Joe?
No, I don't think you should press charges against them.
Unanimous, Mr. Brown. Everyone's saying you should live with it, basically. Let's bring on PC Williams. You're the officer investigating this, PC Williams. If Mr. That's Brown right. decides to press charges, what will happen to Legsy? Talk us through it.
Well, we try not to lock young people up because there is a real problem of reoffending.
Right. So you try not to lock him up, but the reality is what?
Well, if he is locked up, he would be looked after 24 hours a day, he'd have his own room, and he would be safe.
How much will that cost the taxpayer?
That's not actually a police matter, but I happened to finish a job last week, and a young man was sent to a secure training unit, and I happen to know that that will cost, for 1 year, £110,000.
£110,000. And
correct.
If you had that money within the police force, I know it wouldn't be your decision on how to spend it, but what else could that money be spent on that might make someone like Mr. Brown happy?
Well, we could certainly get more bobbies on the beat, and I think every policeman would be behind that. There's also the whole question of effectiveness, as a gentleman just now said. Youth offending services often many possibilities for young people. Anger management, for example. Legsy tends to lose his temper, and it could be that an anger management course would help him a lot on that, and that's a much cheaper and much more effective option for everybody.
If Legsy's sent to children's prison, PC Williams, is that yes. likely to stop him reoffending?
Well, as I say, there's a very high reoffending rate. I have a statistic here in front of me that currently it's 86%.
Right, so the chances are he'll go to children's prison, £100,000 a year spent on him, and then he'll come out and he'll offend over and over and over again.
That's the problem.
What do you reckon then, Mr. Brown? Because the dilemma you face is whether to press charges or not.
Well, first of all, I can't believe it costs £110,000 to put one kid in care. I just don't... That is an appalling and obscene amount of money. What are they spending it on? I mean, you... We all have to pay that money, our council tax. We have to live in fear every day so that they can have personal care. What about our personal care, eh? What about our personal care? I think it's a disgrace that that amount of money has been spent on one young rotten apple.
Mm-hmm. But the only decision you can make is either to press charges and let the system take its course, or to leave things as they are.
Yeah, well, obviously, given that fact I've just heard then about the money, obviously I'd have to review my my decision. But
so you're not going to press charges?
Well, it leaves me in a difficult situation, doesn't it? I mean, I'm thinking of all that money that's being spent on him. I mean, I suppose in that instance, I suppose not. If I'm pushing a corner, I'd say, well, all right, come up with a better solution.
So Mr. Brown's not going to press charges. What do you think he should do? What can be done to improve this situation? Guys in the studio, what do you reckon? Talk to him.
I think, I mean, the problem with this situation is it's already gone too far, and it's hard to answer that question at this stage. But what should have happened is more effective solutions earlier on. I mean, and as we heard, prison is very expensive, but getting into the problems earlier, I mean, our course costs around £7,000 a year, and we've had a lot of young people in doing activity like you've just heard about, who after a year have completely changed and are not engaging in that kind of behaviour. So it's to get there earlier.
Terry's called from Newbury. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Andrew.
Now, you've got a bit of sympathy with Mr. Brown here, haven't you?
I certainly have. I don't know if you remember quite a while ago, I lived in Oak Ridge,
yeah.
And one of your reporters came out, because we had the same problem with a person chucking beer cans in our garden, cutting things down, and even one Christmas... Now, you'll remember, I think you might remember, he actually cut our Christmas lights and put the cable on our door handle.
Right. So what did you do? Well, how was that dealt with, Terry?
Well, we called the police and we got the same situation. You know, we don't want to put the person away. We'll talk to them. But it never calmed down. In fact, we ended up moving away from the area.
Right. So you moved away.
Yeah.
Did you ever have the option to press charges against the people doing this?
I was given the option.
And what did you do?
I didn't do it because I was advised he'll only get either probation and he'll be out and he'll know it was me and he'll make matters even worse.
So what was your advice to Mr. Brownbees in the same situation you were in?
I know he's not going to like this advice, but if I was him, I would consider... I know how he's feeling. It's his house, it's his place. Why should he have to be pushed away? But in the long run, if he wants to save himself any more anxiety, illness and things like that, I'm afraid to say, Mr. Brown, I sympathise with you a lot, but moving might be your better option, mate.
But that is ridiculous. That means everyone in the same area has to move, then, does it? Just leave some barren wilderness with this one care home right in the middle of it, because everybody has to move away.
I'm not saying that, but what... You just heard that policeman. They don't like to put people in prison, do they? They don't like doing it. So, in the long run, that man is going to cause you so much... Do you want to end up like me, being ill? Because I tell you that it will make you feel like that, I'm telling you.
It does. It does make me ill, yeah. I agree. It does make me feel ill.
Yeah.
It makes me depressed.
The system's wrong. I think people like that should be locked away. I don't think... I think they should be taken somewhere. I don't want them put in prison willy-nilly. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying, people like you've got legs, he's just caused you nothing but... I mean, you said yourself he cut your tree down. We had the same problem, but did the police do anything? No.
Terry, thank you for the call. Terry in Newbury. Just come back to my panel of guests, and our 16-year-old Joe is here. If Mr. Brown's not going to press charges, he's not going to move away, what do you think he can do to improve this situation? Is there any way he can stop these kids being such a nightmare?
Well, he could start bonding with them, like, do something to help them, like, just get on with life, really. Just do anything that can help.
Mr. Brown, do you want to ask Joe for some advice? He's a 16-year-old lad, he might be able to help you here.
Well, I have to say, that's all very good and proper, Joe. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I have done my bit. I have done my best to get on with these kids, and I, like I say, I don't see why I have to spend my time trying to bond with kids who come round and chop my tree down and graffiti on my fence and hurl abuse at me on a daily basis and make my life a misery. What kind of... I've got other people...
But if you don't bond with them, they're just going to carry on doing it, I suppose, aren't they?
Well, I've tried to bond. Now, it's not my responsibility. Somebody else's responsibility to try and get them to bond with everybody around them.
It needs
and
a
it's
bit
not
of
just
of
me. I'm not the sole victim here. There are lots of people in this area, in this neighbourhood, who have to put up with it. So we have to spend all our time bonding with them, do we?
It needs a bit of convincing here, Joe, but what bonding advice can you give him? If he wanted to try and befriend these kids so they're not being such a nuisance, how would he go about that? Because this is probably what people like Mr. Brown have no idea about. So what would he do?
Well, you can just, like, have a chat with them and stuff like that. Like, walking, say if I was walking home or something, he sees them, just say hello and stuff like that. Makes a lot of difference, it does.
Do you do that, Mr. Brown?
I have been known to do that, yes. Yes, I mean, obviously, because recent events have overtaken it, occasionally I'll say good morning, or I'll say, you know, and, yeah.
And occasionally you headbutt them.
Well, no. saying good morning, as I have to say, saying good morning, yet I'll get a response back.
We've got Pablo McPhee on the line from Hastings. Hello, Pablo.
Hi.
I guess this is interesting for you, because you work with problem children, don't you?
Yeah, kids with issues, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right.
What would your advice be to Mr. Brown? Should he? I mean, what should he do? Should he talk to these kids or what?
Okay. I've got to say, Mr. Brown, it seems to me like these kids, honestly, they don't like you, and you know, for whatever reason that's occurred. But usually, when young people don't like someone or they feel frightened, because a young man turning up with a knife. Or approaching someone with a knife, from my experience, it's usually to do with fear. And so they're obviously scared of you, and wherever that's come from, I would think if you wanted to really sort that out, it would mean someone somewhere brokering some starting a relationship, some sort of relationship with these young people. The more you ostracize them, or the more you demonize them, then the worse it's going to get for you, because they'll just be like, he doesn't like us, we have no reason to like him, you know, and and it's going to just continue this, the situation.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Pablo, but I have been round there countless times to talk to the people in charge of those kids.
No, I'm not talking about, sorry to interrupt you, I'm not talking about the people in charge of the young people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking about direct eye-to-eye contact, and I'm not talking about squaring up to people. I'm talking about being totally honest about what's happening for you and how the situation is making you feel, and asking the young people, or trying to find out from young people why they feel the way they might feel about you, and how, and trying to find some common ground and how you both can move forward.
Yep.
I mean, we live in cities, and we live in, you know, a really fast moving sort of society at the moment, and we don't usually have time for things like what they normally have in villages, which is just like good morning neighbor, you know, and how you doing and what's happening for you, and I just feel like, you know, we've had great successes over here in Hastings just speaking to young people. That's how we start, just speaking to people on the street.
Pablo,
I would feel like, for me, I can hear that you're suffering.
I am, mate.
Pablo, that's a really great contribution. Thank you so much for that.